Okay, we'll go ahead and get started.
The notes didn't show up online for some reason, so I just emailed them to the class. So hopefully for the remote sites, you'll be able to bring those up. So this is our last lecture before the midterm. So I wanted to wrap up the material in Chapter 8, and then we'll talk just briefly a little bit about the exam. So today what we want to talk about are how we go about making these arrays adaptive. And we'll talk about a couple techniques based on things we're familiar with, things like the LMS algorithm and least squares minimization and such. So these techniques are both, you could say, optimal in that we're talking about how to optimize the coefficients based on something like least squares and adaptive based on using our well-known LMS algorithm. The point of today's lecture is not so much to teach you the ins and outs of this array processing, these array processing approaches, but to just show you how we use adaptive filtering we use adaptive filtering in the context of array processing. There's a lot of details the book doesn't go into on these array processing algorithms, so I'm thinking that if we have time towards the end of the semester, we might want to spend a little bit more time on that. But today we'll just sort of talk about how we use the adaptation algorithms in the context of array processing. Okay, so when an array is subjected to directional interferences, or when the measurement noise is correlated between sensors, non-uniform weighting of sensor outputs can produce superior results to uniform weighting. So last time, we derived a very important result, which said that when the signal was broadside to the array, what kind of performance did we get out of the array? So last time we talked about figures of merit for the array, and when we described one way to look at the benefit of using this array, what it was in terms of what measure?
SNR,
the signal noise ratio. And we showed that in an ideal case, when the source of the signal was directly broadside to the array, directly in front of the array or at a 0 degree angle from perpendicular to the array, what was the overall gain in SNR?
It was
equal to n times basically proportional to n. The output SNR was equal to n times the input SNR, which meant that the increase in SNR was proportional to n. Then we also talked about the fact that if the signal is not broadside to the array, how did we go about adjusting the array to deal with that situation?
Time delay.
We used time delay to steer the array in the direction of the incoming signal. And then we went one step further and we said, well, if there's noise signals coming from the other directions, what can we do? What additionally can we do to the array to offset the effects of the noise? That was sort of one of the last things we talked about last class. What are some additional degrees of freedom we have available to us with the array? Time delay steers the beam. The other thing that we have available to us are the weights. So we showed that by adjusting the weights, we could actually produce nulls in the directions of the noises, assuming those noises were in different directions from the signal. So that's essentially what array processing is all about. It's about steering the array in the direction of the signal. It's about producing zeros in the direction of the noise, and thereby getting a gain in signal-to-noise ratio. So when there's measurement noise that's correlated between sensors, or there's directional interference, non-uniform weighting of the sensor outputs can produce better results. So that's essentially, we want to adjust the W's based on some criterion. Well, there's several ways we can optimize these weights, several objective functions. We can maximize the output signal-to-noise plus interference ratio, which is called the SNIR. That's what we're going to look at today. We can minimize the mean squared error. That's something we've been doing now for a while with our adaptive filter. We can maximize the likelihood or minimize the noise variance. All four of these produce results that are very similar. In particular, the maximum likelihood, particularly when we assume that the noise is Gaussian and that the noise is uncorrelated, that produces essentially the same result as these other two approaches. So we'll focus mainly on the first two, this maximization of the signal-to-noise plus interference ratio and the mean squared error. So the output of the array can be written as, well, our signal is going to be this vector x represents a vector of the signals coming out of the sensors. The weights are going to be W, which are, in the most general case, a vector of complex values. And the output of the array, then, is y of t is equal to w transpose times x of t. In the book, they go into what they call the real signal formulation and the complex signal formulation, and they show that these are just two interchangeable representations. We're just going to focus on the complex signal formulation today. So the output power of the array, that is the expectation of y of t squared, this is just, we've shown this previously, this is just w, the Hermitian of w times the expectation of x star times x times w. This is, the Hermitian is just the conjugate transpose, and this expectation of x star, x transpose is just the autocorrelation matrix. But the one thing to note here is that this autocorrelation function is really an autocorrelation function with respect to space, since it's an autocorrelation between these signals at the different sensors, rather than an autocorrelation function with respect to time, which is what we've seen before. So this is going to be our basic formulation, and what we want to explore today is how we can use adaptive signal processing to estimate the W's. So the output signal has the signal of interest. It's got the interference noises, and it also has any kind of noise correlated between the sensors, so that we can write that the signal component of the output power, which we'll denote as y sub s of t, the expectation of that squared, is just pi sub s times w h s conjugate s transpose times w, where s represents the steering vector, the w's represents the weights, and this pi represents the expectation of the message signal m of t. If you recall, last time we described the narrowband array approach, where we were going to model the signal of interest as a message m of t times a modulator e to the j omega t. So the output power of the signal of interest is given by this expression, which is a function of the power of the message signal and this quadratic form for the weights of the array and the steering vector. And the steering vector we talked about last time is simply a function of the angle at which the signal is incident to the array. Now we can write the noise plus interference correlation matrix, which we're going to call R sub t. That has three components to it. That has the correlation of the noise between the sensors, which we're going to call R sub v. That has the ambient or isotropic noise, which we're going to call R sub I, and that has the interference noise, which is going to be the sum from k is equal to 1 to m of pi sub k, sk conjugate, sk transpose. So this third term is essentially the noise coming from different directions, and these other two terms are essentially any other kinds of noise that appear in your output signal. And we'll just sort of lump those together, and then what we'll try to do is we'll try to adjust the coefficients of the array W so that we somehow maximize the signal of interest and cancel as much of, of these different noises as possible. Canceling out this third term, the interference noise, is going to require steering the nulls in the direction of that noise. Canceling of these other two noises is really just going to amount to assumptions about correlation. So we're going to assume that this R sub V is this uncorrelated noise between the sensors, which means that the correlation matrix for R sub V is just the noise power, which we'll call sigma sub V squared times an identity matrix. So we want to think about how we can what we should actually maximize. We'd like to maximize the signal to noise ratio of perhaps the signal of interest divided by all the noises. But unfortunately, we don't really have access to the signal of interest directly. All that we have access to is the signal the output of the sensors. So we're going to define a term which is the signal to noise plus interference ratio. And this consists of the signal output power, which we previously said was pi sub s times the Hermitian of w times s conjugate s transpose times w. And then we're going to divide that by all of the noises in the system, which essentially are this R sub t. Only we'll divide this by the weights, the weighted version of R sub t that appears in the output. So we have WH times R sub t times W. So the numerator gives us essentially the power of the signal of interest. The denominator gives us the power of all the noises summed together. And the degree of freedom here is our ability to adjust W, which will allow us to sort of steer the array and maximize the signal-to-noise ratio. So, you know, obviously what we're going to do here is to try to adjust W to maximize this SNIR. Now to do this, sort of a standard way to do this is to use Lagrangian. You might think about, well, we could just differentiate this function with respect to W, but that's kind of messy because we have a quadratic form in the numerator, quadratic form in the denominator, and the ratio of the two, and that's not going to give us as clean a solution. The standard way of doing these kinds of problems is to use the method of Lagrange multipliers. So we're going to define a cost function J, which is the numerator term minus a Lagrange multiplier times the denominator term, well, the Lagrange multiplier times the quantity of the denominator term minus a constant k. And we're going to then try to maximize j with respect to w. The reason for doing this is that it gives us a cleaner solution and a fairly linear set of equations and such, whereas if we tried to maximize that ratio, we'd get a set of nonlinear equations. And this constant k we don't need to worry about that too much because that's going to be zero. When we differentiate with respect to the W's, that's going to be zero. This is really just, sometimes you'll see when people do Lagrange multipliers, if the goal was to set this norm equal to 1, then this would just be the constant 1. So this is just essentially a constant we don't need to worry too much about. So to maximize this expression, we're going to differentiate it with respect to W. To do that, though, we need a result which says that the derivative, if we have this quadratic form, the Hermitian of x, some vector x times some matrix C times the vector x, and remember the Hermitian is just the conjugate transpose. If we differentiate this quadratic form with respect to x, we just get 2 times C times x. And that's not unexpected. We know that this is essentially a quadratic, and when you differentiate the quadratic, you should get 2 times the linear component of that. So that's not too hard to prove. One way you can prove this is to just, you can prove it by example, just writing out for like a 2x2 or 3x3 matrix, the equations and differentiating them. Remembering that this derivative with respect to the vector x, this is just shorthand notation for derivatives with respect to all the components of x. So this actually represents a system of equations, and like I said, if you write them out, you can fairly easily show that. So we can differentiate J with respect to W, and we sort of know where this is going to be headed because, again, we have this quadratic form, so the derivatives with respect to W should produce a set of linear equations. So the derivative with respect to W of J is, well, this first term is going to give us 2 times pi, that's essentially a constant, times S conjugate S transpose. That again is essentially a constant with respect to W. And then we'll just use this identity to write W. So we're essentially, the first term gives us this term proportional to W. The derivative of the second term associated with lambda, well, again, we have a quadratic form here, WH, R sub T, W. So the derivative of that will just give us R sub T times W, applying this property that we just stated. And the derivative of lambda times K with respect to W is going to be equal to zero. So we don't need to worry about that. So we differentiate J with respect to W, and we set that equal to zero. So we can then throw away the 2, and we can multiply by R sub T inverse, so that we isolate the lambda times W. So we have pi sub S times R sub T inverse times SS transpose times W minus lambda times W is equal to zero. And this then can be easily solved. You can write this in the form of pi times a matrix A minus lambda quantity times W is equal to zero, where this matrix A is equal to R transpose, R sub T inverse times S conjugate S transpose. Now, the reason we want to write it this way is because this is in the form of an eigenvalue problem, where the eigenvalues are the values of the SNIR and the eigenvectors are the array weights. There are n distinct eigenvalues of A, and the largest of these, lambda sub max, maximizes the SNR. So this equation, which essentially gives us pi sub s times A minus lambda, that quantity multiplied by W is equal to zero. The solution to this is in the form of an eigenvalue and eigenvector decomposition of this matrix A. And the values of lambda that are going to satisfy this equation are the eigenvalues of the matrix A. And the eigenvectors of the matrix A become then the array weights. that we're interested in.
The beacon?
Yep.
Do we need a chain term over there, even though it is erased by the differentiate?
Like I said, and the way that, I think the reason that they write this this way is normally in a lot of these kinds of problems, you'll have a situation where this is the auxiliary constraint. So the reason, so with these eigenvalue, with these Lagrange multipliers, you have a functional, you essentially create a cost function, which is a combination of all the constraints at your disposal. And if our, the, so what we have here is we're going to try to maximize this and minimize this, thereby maximizing the difference between these two. Now, this secondary constraint, oftentimes this will be written as you want the WR transpose W to be equal to 1. So what you do then is you take that equation and set it, you play a little trick. You take the W, you take the left-hand side, which is this WR sub TW, minus the right-hand side is equal to 0. So that this term is equal to 0, and then you multiply it by lambda, and that's how you set up the Lagrange multiplier. You're essentially adding a constraint which becomes 0 when you find the eigenvalues of lambda, when you plug in the eigenvalues of lambda. So here, we don't necessarily constrain this term to be equal to 1, but we constrain it to just be some constant. If you throw that away, if you throw that constant away, then the problem you have is that this is non-zero when you plug in the value, the eigenvalue. But it doesn't really impact the way we find the solution for W's. So don't worry about it too much. So this formulation then provides us a solution for finding the lambdas and the W's. And what we're after are the W's. We don't really care about the lambdas, but in these eigenvalue problems, you have to find both the eigenvalues and then the associated weights. So the eigenvectors of A become the weights that we need for the array. Now we can go a little bit further and we can actually find an expression for the weights as follows. We can write that if these weights correspond to the eigenvectors of A, we can write that pi sub s times A times the weights W sub sn, we'll call the these optimal weights W sub sn, that's just equal to lambda max times WSN for the maximum eigenvalue of A. And that's just a property, that's really just stating what it means to be an eigenvalue or an eigenvector of a matrix. They're the values of W that satisfy this equation. But we also know that this eigenvalue is going to be the maximum value of the SNIR, so that we can write in terms of our expression for the SNIR, pi W sub the Hermitian of W, S conjugate, S transpose times W divided by the Hermitian of W, R sub T times W. So we can combine these two equations, and we can write that when we use the eigenvectors for the weights and the eigenvalue for lambda, we can write that pi sub s times a times w sub sn, which is just our optimal value w, is equal to lambda max, and for lambda max we'll plug in this expression based on the SNIR times w. And now what we're going to do is we're going to try to solve this equation for W's. So we can pre-multiply by R sub T because we're going to want to And we're going to want to try to get rid of some of these this R sub t inverse. So the matrix A, if you recall, let me go back to that. The matrix A is R sub t inverse S conjugate S transpose. So if we make that substitution here, we're going to have have this term pi R sub t inverse S conjugate S transpose times W. If we pre-multiply by R, this pi is a constant. We can make these R's go away, and we just have R times lambda max times W sub Sn. And so then that leaves us this pi sub S times S conjugate times S transpose W sub Sn is equal to, and then for the R sub T's, we can, this term here, this is just a constant, so we can move the R sub T over here and write R sub T times W. So now we can divide out things that are appear in both sides. So we have the pi here is essentially a constant, so we can divide that out and remove that from the numerator here on the right-hand side. And the S transpose W sub Sn also appears here, and it appears here, so we can get rid of that. So we can write that the that S conjugate, which, and S is just the steering vector, is the only thing left here is the W, the Hermitian of W sub Sn times S conjugate divided by the denominator WH R sub T W. And then on the right-hand side, we have this R sub T times W sub Sn. So this tells us that S conjugate, when we have the optimal values of W are related to the steering vector by this equation, which says that S conjugate is equal to this term W in brackets times R sub T times W. But this is just a constant, so we can actually write this as a constant C times R sub T times W, where this constant C is this ratio of the W's times S divided by W R sub T, WH R sub T of W. And therefore, the optimal values of W are just 1 over C times the inverse of R sub T times S conjugate. So what we've done, if we go back to, so what we've done is we've started with this configuration, and we have set up an objective function, and we now, where W is essentially the variable, the free variable, and we show that if we set W equal to this term, which is related to the inverse of this interference correlation matrix, then we will maximize this signal-to-noise ratio. Now, of course, there's still this is an analytic solution, so there's still the usual caveats with this that we don't know often what. We don't know a couple things here. We don't know, in general, what this autocorrelation is, what that correlation matrix is. That has to be estimated somehow. And in general, we also don't know, in general, what the steering vector is. That's a priori information. And but if we can guess where the direction of the signal, And sometimes that's done through heuristics. We can then compute the steering vector. So that's not really a problem. The only problem here is really, once again, much like we saw with the LMS algorithm, estimation of the correlation structure. And that's really where the adaptive filter comes in, that we can estimate these weights adaptively and essentially circumvent the process of computing that inverse, which would be very expensive. And we'll talk about that, and we'll show you two solutions to that problem. But before we do this, let's do a quick sanity check. If we assume a broadside signal, and we assume that the sensors are corrupted by uncorrelated noise, and we ignore the interferers, this was one of the first cases we looked at. R sub t then just becomes the power of the noise, sigma sub v squared times I. And the steering vector is just all ones because the signal is broadside to the array. And therefore, the weights for the coefficients just become 1 over c times rt inverse, which is just 1 over sigma sub v squared times I, times the steering vector, which is 1. So the weight vector just degenerates to a constant term times these 1s. So what this means is that when the signal is broadside to the array, the optimal weights for the array are all 1s. And that's essentially the delay in some beamformer that we introduced previously. So that's a nice sanity check that this equation seems to make sense when the signal is broadside. The other thing to point out here is that when the signal isn't broadside, you can think of this as a two-step process where you adjust the steering vector so that the array is now pointed in the direction of the signal, and then you essentially treat that signal that results from that as though the signal were broadside to the array. So the steering vector really just produces a sort of a scaling of the coefficients that allows them to be directed in the direction of the noise. In the direction of the signal. So that's one approach to deriving the optimal configuration of this array for the signal plus interfering noise that we described. And the approach was to use an objective function, which was maximization of this SNIR term. Now an alternate way to derive this would be to look at this problem as an adaptive filtering problem where we have a signal y, which is a weighted sum of these signals x. We have a desired signal d of t, and we try to adjust the weights so as to minimize the difference between the desired signal and the measured signal. This is essentially our adaptive filtering scenario. And we've worked this problem a couple, different ways. We can, in fact, use a minimum mean squared error approach to this problem. So we can define the error signal as d of t minus y of t. And y of t is just w transpose times x of t. We can establish a cost function j, which is the expectation of the power in the energy. Expectation of the power in the error signal. And previously we've developed this. You can substitute in for E of t this d of t times w transpose x, and you can expand that. The only difference here is that we did this for the case previously when we were dealing with real signals, where the W's were real and the X's were real. Here, the W's can be complex and the S's complex. So the form of this cost function J, it's similar to what we've seen before, except we have the magnitude of D of T squared because D of T could be complex. We have the Hermitian of W times R times W, and we have the expectation of the real part of this WH times D of T times X conjugate of T. So and the book has the details of this. I'm not going to go through the details of this derivation today because we sort of know what the result is going to be, and I'll show that in a minute. But the form of it is slightly different because we have to deal with the expectation of this complex conjugate times E. So we get some conjugates in the equation. Now, what we do in the what we've been doing in the least squares approach is to minimize J with respect to W. So we can differentiate this term with respect to W. And we've done this many times throughout the semester already. We know that this is a quadratic form, so the derivative with respect to W should result in a set of linear equations. And if we, in fact, do that differentiation, we can show that the least square solution for the weights W is equal to the inverse of the autocorrelation of the inverse of the correlation matrix times this vector G. That's the same solution that we had previously. The only difference, once again, is that this matrix R is a spatial correlation. It's the expectation of xn times xn minus 1 and so forth. It's not a temporal correlation. When we use a narrowband signal, and this is what we had been using for this derivation, when we assume that S of t is equal to M of t times e to the j omega t, so our message times some modulator, and we assume that the signals that we receive at the sensors, X of t, are a sum of a desired signal X of t plus some noise V of t, this solution reduces to pi times R inverse times S conjugate, and where S conjugate is the steering vector and this pi is the energy in the message signal. And in the book, they go through a more extended derivation where we use this, we previously introduced the matrix inversion lemma to compute this R inverse. And the details of that are in the book, but the result of that is to write this expression in terms of, to sort of put it in a form that it can be directly compared to what we had for the maximization of SNIR. I think there's a T missing here. Which is throwing me off a little bit. But the point of doing this is to show that the form of the least square solution is similar to the solution that we get when we maximize the SNIR. The only difference, they're only different by a constant. And so therefore the least square solution and the maximization of the SNIR solution produce essentially similar results. So I just wanted to sort of mention that the details of this derivation are in the book. Again, it's something we've done several times before, so you can read more on that in the book. So whether we maximize a signal-to-noise ratio, this SNIR, or we minimize the error using least squares, we get essentially the same solution for the W's. So now let's turn to how we can actually solve this problem using an iterative approach, an adaptive approach, rather than having to do the matrix inversion directly. So this is what's known as the Griffiths adaptive beamformer. This was one of the first solutions introduced to this problem. And the simplest approach to this would be to, again, use our mean squared error minimization. And we know that when we do that, we know that the solution to this is going to be to compute the new estimate of W sub n plus 1, as W sub n plus some adaptation constant alpha times the error signal E of n times our vector x. So on the right hand side here, I have a picture of what we're going to do here. This adaptive beamformer is going to essentially take each one of the sensors, x, the sensor outputs, and it's going to use a tapped delay line, essentially an FIR filter, on each one of those sensors, and then we're going to adjust the weights of those filters, and then we're going to sum those outputs to produce y. So this approach, we're adding essentially the ability to apply a linear filter to each one of the x's, and we're going to estimate the coefficients of these filters using this iterative update equation. And the only real issue here is that this adaptation size, again, we have to worry about that in terms of whether this will converge. And not surprisingly, you can show that this adaptation constant is again related to the maximum eigenvalue, as we showed for the standard LMS. But if you remember when we did this standard derivation of the LMS solution, we had to introduce this desired signal D of n. And with the LMS algorithm, the D of n was just a single dimensional signal that we represented our desired signal. Now the problem with doing that in this context of array processing is if we just introduced the difference between y of n, y of t, and d of t, the d of t does not contain any spatial information, so we can't really make use of the spatial diversity of the array. Now you could introduce a desired signal for each one of the sensors, but that's too complicated. So the Griffiths adaptive beamformer, the innovation here was to simply sort of forget about D of n and just operate on delayed versions of the sensors and to try to adjust these coefficients to minimize some criterion such as the mean squared error. And to do that, there's one little sort of trick that has to be made, which is this: in our standard formulation for the LMS, we have this term alpha times E of n times X of n. That's our correctional term, and we showed that this E of n is equal to D of n minus Y of n. So you can also rewrite this update equation as a function of alpha times D of n times X of n minus alpha times Y of n times X of n. Now, with the Griffiths beamformer, what's done is to replace this D of n, which is a instantaneous signal, by the expected value of D of n times X of n, and that's actually what we call G. And so the update equation becomes Wn sub n plus 1 is equal to Wn plus alpha times g minus alpha times y of n times x of n. And this vector g It's just, what's used for that is the steering vector, which is something we can compute using either a priori knowledge or we can estimate that somehow heuristically. But the point of the Griffiths beamformer is that the correction, the coefficients are going to be updated using essentially this alpha times y of n times x of n, but we're also going to have a constant term here which is related to the steering vector. And in the case of the broadside array, this term is going to go to zero, so we'll just have our standard update equation. So it's a very simple approach based on our LMS solution, but it also attempts to take into account if the signal is not broadside, you have to have some sort of bias in these W's to make the array point in the right direction. And you know, if you think about that long enough, you'll realize if we could actually put some delays up in front of the array to steer, and then the rest of the derivation just becomes a standard broadside derivation, and then the standard LMS equations apply, and you would not need to do this term. So this is actually the classic adaptive beamformer, and it's implemented in terms of a series of FIR filters. And the coefficients of those FIR filters are adaptively estimated using our standard update equation. And you can apply most of what we've learned about how all the different ways this can be implemented. You can apply that to these equations. And one of the nice things about this is that the computational complexity is not that great. And we can leverage all the things we've learned for the case where we just had essentially a single channel. So this is just really a multi-channel extension of the LMS algorithm we've been talking about previously. Now the last thing I want to talk about today very briefly was a extension of this called the Griffiths-Jim adaptive beamformer. And the book really doesn't do justice to this. I mean, this is a fairly involved topic. The book just kind of sketches through how this works, and I thought I'd just say a few comments about it. But there are a lot of details associated with this that aren't covered in the book, unfortunately. So the idea here is that we're going to try to decouple the problem. This array is trying to do two things simultaneously. It's trying to direct the array in the direction of the signal, which requires some kind of bias or offset in the coefficients. And it's also trying to cancel the noise by directing nulls in the direction of the noise. There a question? It's the end of the book. And with this Griffiths jam adaptive beamformer, we try to decouple those problems. So what we have on the upper section here is an array which attempts to steer itself in the direction of the incoming signal and produce an output which essentially focuses on the incoming signal. Then what we try to do is we take the steered array and we try to, through this matrix T, we try to remove the signal component of that so that we can then build an array which operates only on the interferers, and it attempts to cancel those interferers. And it attempts to cancel those by using what amounts to essentially a back-end adaptive filter that's now got an estimate of the interferer here, which we're going to then subtract from the conventional array, so so that hopefully if this all works properly and we're minimizing Y of N, we're going to then remove as much of the interfering noise as possible. So we, along the upper section, we have a beam steered array which steers itself in the direction of the signal. We then take that signal and filter it through a linear filter to account for any kind of transmission effects that we have in the environment. This is essentially a deconvolution type filter. This signal now is going to have, it's going to sort of strengthen it's going to strengthen the signal of interest because the array has been pointed in the direction of signal of interest. But it's also got, you've now got the interferers coming from the other directions. So this piece of the array is going to attempt to now cancel the interferers. The only problem with that is if this is signal plus interferers, and we want to subtract the interferers, we need an estimate of the interferers. So to get that estimate, we take this, we take the output here, and we construct a matrix T, which is really based on, in some sense, the steered array here. But if you set T up properly, and in the book they sort of describe this very, very briefly though, what you'll get out here then is a, given that this array is steered in the direction of the signal, what you'll get out here is a signal which should have very little elements of the signal of interest in it. And because what you're going to do is you're going to essentially difference these adjacent taps, and in doing that, you're going to cancel the signal but sort of reinforce the noise, because the signal should not change that much between these. The only difference in the signal between these channels should be a time delay, which is accounted for here. So if, for example, you difference these two, if this is signal plus noise and this is delayed signal plus noise, when you difference them, when you difference the delayed versions, the signal should go away and the noise should sort of get reinforced. So this signal that comes out here should have lots of noise in it and very few remnants of the signal of interest. And now we can think about this piece as an adaptive filter where we try to essentially get rid of the noise and by minimizing the amount of the energy in Y then. So this two-step process is known as the Griffiths-Jim adaptive beamformer. And I don't have a lot of experience with, I don't have much experience with this, but my guess is, like a lot of these systems, when elements of the signal start bleeding through here, you have problems then getting this to actually work in practice. Most of the arrays that are implemented having trouble with that today. This form of the book. This is a much more common form of the arrays that you'll see implemented in practice. Most of the commercial products that you see do a variant of this, and I don't know, and so I think that this approach is sort of an extension of that. There's been a lot of work done over the years on how to improve these things, and that's why I think this chapter really doesn't do justice to the concept of array processing, which is a pretty big broad topic and worth sort of a course in itself. But the main thing I just wanted to point out today by introducing this is to show you that we can use the concept of this adaptive signal processing, this LMS algorithm, we can use that as a piece in almost any kind of a system that tries to estimate a signal of some form. And we've been, for most of the semester, been looking at an essentially a single channel case, but it can be equally applicable to the multi-channel problem. And anytime you see any of these adaptive systems, it's almost guaranteed that the iterative solution to the re-estimation equations is going to be of this kind of update equation form that we've been dealing with most of the semester. So that's what all I wanted to say today about this array processing concept. And I wanted to say a few words about the exam and then a few words about where we're going to be headed for the rest of the semester. So the exam, you know, obviously there's a lot of material. We've covered a lot of material in the first half of this class. The exam is mainly going to focus on the core concepts of the LMS algorithm and the least squares solutions and things. And we're not going to, there won't be any questions on array processing or any of, or differential, we talked about, for example, differential, adaptive differential pulse code modulation and things like that. There won't be any questions on that kind of stuff. We'll stick to the basic concepts of LMS and least squares minimization and the implementation of those, both the analytic solutions and the adaptive solutions and the different types of adaptive solutions that we talked about. Because I think as you look back over everything we've covered, it's very repetitive. You see, we're basically applying the same kinds of techniques to each one of these specific application areas. So hopefully that will make it a little easier to prepare for the exam. Now, with respect to the rest of the course, what I would like to do, I think what we'll begin with once we get back from the exam. So there's no class next Tuesday, and then we have the exam on Thursday. And then the following Tuesday, we will start looking at, we're going to reformulate this adaptation problem in terms of sort of a model-directed approach where we have some existing, we have some model that we've estimated maybe through maximum likelihood techniques, and we now want to transform elements of that model using new data. So we typically, the way this works, we take, you may have developed offline a model of your data, and I'm most familiar to doing this in a hidden Markov model type context. So we build a hidden Markov model on lots of data, and it's a fairly you can think of this model as being fairly complex. It may, in the case of speech recognition systems, this model may have millions of parameters associated with it. So you train this in an environment, for example, this room. We train the system to work on data collected in this room. But now you go and you want to use this model in a different environment, like over the telephone or outside or on your cell phone or whatever. The question you want to ask is, what's the easiest way to, or what's the most efficient way to update this model so that it works reasonably well in a new environment? So one of the emphasis in this kind of thing is really adapting from one environment that you've trained in to another environment. Versus what we've looked at thus far tends to be approaches which focus on you're in the same environment and you're just trying to adapt over time. Okay, well, we're going to now take a step back from that and we're going to think about time as just one of the dimensions which you might want to adapt to. The changes in environment might be another dimension. Now, when you have this model with millions of parameters, it's very expensive to train and develop these models. They take lots of data. For example, in the case of a speech recognition system, we may be using tens of thousands of hours of data. It may take months or years of computer time to train that model. And yet, you want that model now to adapt to a new speaker. For example, you would like that model to adapt to you and your cell phone, and your particular voice, your particular cell phone. Well, it's not practical to update all of the parameters of that model, because there's millions of parameters. That's going to take you collecting many, many hours of speech. So if your cell phone company, when they gave you your cell phone, told you, well, now we need you to go off and spend weeks and months training the system so it'll work on your voice, you'd get pretty upset. So the solution to this problem is to, rather than reestimate all the parameters, think of this as a vector space projection type problem, where you have the space in which you trained, you have the target space in which you operate, and you want to somehow have an efficient way of transforming the model parameters from one space to the other. And you can think of that as a vector projection. So, obviously you could project every parameter in the original space. You could have a projection function for each parameter in your model, but that would be millions of projection functions. And that would be a lot of data to estimate all those projection functions. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to hypothesize a variety of functional transformations, like, for example, just a linear transformation. Take the parameters, multiply all of them by the same transformation vector into the new space. And that one transformation vector will have a very small number of parameters associated with it, and we're going to try to estimate those parameters using a small amount of new data. So you have the parameter values, which are conditioned on a large amount of data, you have a small amount of new data, and you now want to ask the question, what is the optimal transformation matrix given the combination of these two, and how can I go about combining them? And we'll show that a very effective way to combine these is to use a maximum likelihood approach, where we estimate the parameters of this transformation now using the new data plus the old data in a maximum likelihood type scenario. And we essentially adapt the parameters based on this new data. So we compute effectively what amount to these correctional terms. But these correctional terms do not require retraining the entire model on all of the previous data. It just requires adapting the model on a small amount of new data and using the accumulated results from the older data. So this is sort of where adaptation is today. This is the way, and the people do this across a broad range of applications and systems, but it's been, I would say, the area of speech processing has probably been one of the leaders in this area, because we use adaptation quite a lot in normal systems. So we'll sort of look at it from a audio type or one-dimensional signal type point of view, but everything we say will be equally applicable to the multi-channel problems or things like that. And the main thing that we'll delve into is what there are many, many different criteria you can use to estimate these parameters. You can use maximum likelihood, you can use discriminative training, you can use Bayesian techniques. So I think that one of the challenges in the second half of the course is going to be to cover this material. We're going to need to introduce some of you to some of these basic topics. And that's what I'm still sort of working through, is how much of the basic material we have to review to get you to the point where we can understand how these adaptation techniques work. Now, we covered a lot of this in the pattern recognition course, but we don't, of course, have time here to go into that level of detail. So we'll kind of cover the surface. But if you're not familiar with things like Bayesian estimation, maximum likelihood estimation, discriminative training, it's going to be, I think, a little bit hard for you to grasp the material without doing some outside background reading on this. And I know that there are only a couple people in the course who've taken the pattern recognition course, so most of you will have not seen this material before. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. The first technique we're going to talk about is something called maximum likelihood linear regression. And I think after we make it through that, I'll have a better feel for how much of this material you can grasp. If we need to, we can go back into more detail on background material like hidden Markov models and such, because a lot of this is going to be based on a hidden Markov model type formulation in which we use what's known as the EM algorithm to estimate the parameters and to update the parameters. So for some of you, it's going to seem like a lot of new material, but this is actually building on top of some well-established material in the pattern recognition area. So, I didn't want to really start that today because with the exam and the break and all that, you pretty much forget whatever we covered today. So, what we'll do at this point, we've now finished essentially the book, so you can put your textbooks away after the exam. And I will provide you with some reading materials. We'll use a number of famous papers in this area to cover this material, because there isn't a really good textbook description of a lot of this material, so we'll have to rely on research papers and such. So, okay, well, if there are no further questions, then we'll just break a little early today, and I will see you on a week from today for the exam.